Evening. This is William Bendix. Within the last year, your life and my life and the world we live in have been changed. It is difficult for us to understand that the way we lived yesterday and the way we thought yesterday will no longer do. The dropping of the atomic bomb has brought us, all of us, to the beginning of a new day. And we must start thinking in new ways and in broader terms. It is our only chance for survival.
The Fifth Horseman. Four horsemen rode across the land, and their names were...
War,
Pestilence,
Famine, Death.
And to these now is added a fifth horseman, the threat of the atom.
The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Fifth Horseman, written and produced by Arnold Marquis. Here is the plain truth about the awesome significance of atomic energy and the hour of decision which faces mankind. Starring William Bendix, this is the second in the series titled Dawn.
It happened on my last run that night. I'd been watching a woman sitting all by herself about halfway up the left aisle. Sharp-looking dame, about 35. Not the kind of a dame that usually rides on the subway. Anyway, not on my run. She was the woman I'd seen that same afternoon walk into the Belvedere Hotel. Yeah. She met some guy in the lobby. And they certainly were cozy.
Board, all aboard. Step forward, please. Step forward. Board.
Well, Frank Wartle gets on at this stop. You know Wartle, the guy that manages all those big office buildings and apartment buildings. And he goes up and sits down beside this dame.
Well, what are you doing out this time of night, Stephanie?
Oh, visiting with a sorority sister of mine.
Mm-hmm. How's Otto?
Oh, fine.
Suppose he'll be at the station to meet you.
Yes. I wanted to spend the night with my sorority sister, but,
Yeah.
How's Emily?
Emily? Oh, fine, fine. I'm pretty busy these days. Forming a syndicate to put up a coliseum, you know.
Oh, coliseum?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, I read about that.
Sitting right behind Wartle and this dame is a woman. A fine-looking woman. And a man, about 40. I could see they didn't know each other. First time I looked at the man, I said to myself, there's something special about that guy.
Oh, my two sons are big enough, I suppose. One of them's 7 and the other one's 9. But I'm uneasy when I leave them alone like this.
You couldn't take the children alone?
Well, no. I got my husband's call at the home of a friend, and there wasn't enough time to get home and get the boys and get down to see my husband before he left.
Mm, too bad.
I thought I'd be home before this, but my husband's plane was delayed.
Where?
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to knock those papers off your lap.
That's all right.
Oh, here. Some of them went right down under my feet. I'll get them for you. Here.
Thank you.
Oh, Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, the implication of atomic energy, the atom bomb, an absolute weapon. Well, pretty heavy reading, isn't it?
Depends on what you think is important.
Sitting right across the aisle from this woman and this scientist was Congressman Cumshaw. You know Bertram Cumshaw. Whenever Cumshaw is around, which is a lot of the time, He's downtown talking to the other politicians in the machine.
I didn't get your name.
Polzer. Sig Polzer.
Oh, yes, yes, Polzer. Mr. Polzer, have you thought far enough to realize that OPA was regimentation, and regimentation leads to communism?
Well, have you thought far enough to realize what would happen to this country without OPA?
Mr. Polzer, what's your business?
Me? I work in the McKibben plant.
Uh-huh. Well, we get a little different perspective of things in Congress, Mr. Polzer. And let me tell you that we've got to stick by free enterprise. Law of supply and demand will take care of everything else.
Well, we were heading down under the river. The mother of those two boys was listening to that special-looking guy who turns out to be a scientist. I watched him. The guy talking very quiet, and the woman with that blank look that people have when their mind is 1,000 miles away. In the seat in front of them, Frank Wardle was talking very personal to Stephanie. And from what I could get, he wasn't talking about business either. He was getting very chummy. All of a sudden, the train stops.
Oh, I couldn't on Tuesday. Oh.
That was Stephanie.
Well, what's wrong, man? Keep your seats, everybody. Keep calm and keep your seats.
Heavens, it's dark. Well,
something's happened. We're right under the river.
Are we really?
Yes, I think we are.
Turn on the lights. Conductor, turn on the lights.
Come on, turn on the lights.
Yeah,
let's go. Hurry up.
I snapped on the emergency lights. And what I saw almost scared me. People in the aisles. Some of them jammed against the doors. Some of them standing on the seats.
Everybody in your seats, please.
Look at this. People trapped 30 seconds in the dark, and look at them.
Yes.
Are you scared, Stephanie?
Not me. I'm in no hurry to get home.
Well, we've got to get out of here. Look here, conductor, what's holding us up?
Well, they're trying to find out now.
Well, I've got business to attend to. Man waiting for me out in Exmoor, right now.
As soon as they find out what's happened, we'll start.
I hope we won't be delayed too long.
I hope we won't, too.
Never can tell.
Look here, conductor. I'm Congressman Cumshaw.
He had that way that politicians have.
Your company operates under a franchise from the state, and you have some responsibilities to the public. Do you realize that we are right under the river? Now, find out what's happening. Let's get out of here.
I went up to the head end. The motorman was trying to find out what was wrong. I stayed and helped him for about 20 minutes. Then I went back into the car.
I've got business, Stephanie. Man who's going to be in on the syndicates waiting for me in Exmoor right now.
Here comes the conductor.
Well, what did you find out?
There's no power.
Then we're trapped. Well, I'm going anyway. Get out of my way, conductor.
Sit right down where you were. Pitch black in that tunnel out there. We don't know what's happened. You'll get killed.
Get out of my way.
You're going to stay right where you are.
Let go of me. You...
Polzer jumped up and helped me.
Back in your seat. Ain't you got any sense? Take your hands off me. Do you know who I am? Yes, I know who you are. You and all your buildings and your promotions. So what?
Then let go of me and let...
Polzer and I shoved him back in his seat beside Stephanie. And then the scientist started to talk.
You should not be frightened by this. You may have to live this way, if you live at all.
What are you talking about?
You're in the business of building management, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
What do you suppose is going to happen to all those wonderful buildings if there's another war?
I'm not worried about that.
Have you got bomb shelters under them?
Underground shelters will be of little use if another war comes. It'll be an atomic war.
You seem to know.
I do. You could build shelters deep enough and cover them with enough lead and concrete to protect people from an atomic bomb explosion. But you couldn't keep all the people in these shelters all the time. Unless you put all your factories and shops and offices there too. So it's time you recognize those buildings and that Colosseum of yours may be just empty dream.
Look, all I'm interested in is getting out of here. We're trapped and under the river.
That's right. We're in a steel tube 10 feet underwater. Good protection against radiation if an atomic bomb explodes overhead. You know what? A few years from now, tunnels under the river may be as choice locations as Park Avenue penthouses are now.
Do you suppose that something could have happened?
I don't
to
know,
the...
Mrs. Grover.
Well, I want to get out.
We're trapped under here the same as we're trapped in the new world. It's dark. There's very little light. And no one knows how long that light will last.
Everybody in the car listened. I, too. At first, I couldn't quite get what he was getting at about the world or about the light. But what he said about people and shops and offices and even penthouses being underground, that hit me like a load of bricks. Everybody having to live underground like rats in a hole.
We have reached a turning point. A new world is emerging. A different world. And we'd better recognize it. Are we going to change with it? Or are we going to let it be destroyed first?
We've always been able to take care of ourselves.
We will never again have this chance. Not with rockets and jet planes and saboteurs armed with atomic bombs. Atomic bombs will be bursting in our cities in a war 10 or 20 years from now. As sure as blockbusters hit Berlin and B-1s and B-2s hit London in World War II. A government worth its salt will not wait for this to happen. It will order most of the people out of the cities long before war comes, disperse them over the country. With the cities half deserted, what will happen to your fine buildings and that Colosseum you're thinking about? I'll tell you. They'll fall in with decay.
That stopped Wortle. Everybody settled down, and I went up to the head end to see the motorman again. We decided that the best thing to do was for him to take his electric torch and walk ahead up the tunnel and try to find out what happened. And for the trainman to walk back. And for me to stick with the passengers. When I came back and told the passengers, Wortle blows his top.
And what are we going to do here?
You're gonna wait.
The air. Is the air still all right?
I think so.
We've been down here more than 3 hours now.
Unless there's been a fire somewhere along in the tunnel.
Fire? My poor boy. They're just tarps. And they're alone.
The scientists sat there and answered questions about the bomb and all as fast as they fired them at him. Polzer, the fellow that worked in the McKimmon plant, went over and leaned over him.
You said if an atomic war approaches, the government will order the people out of the cities.
If they don't do it before, it may be too late.
Well, they can't move me out of the city. I own my own home. All my savings are in it.
Your factory will be closed by the government and moved possibly to Wyoming or the Dakotas.
Ooh, what about me and my family?
What will be left to you? What to follow? There'll be no jobs in the city. And if you insist on staying behind, you might be ordered to follow it.
What are you talking about?
The cities will be the targets. Who'll buy a home there? Even in World War II, many people who lived close to aircraft plants and military installations sold their homes for ridiculous prices and moved to where they thought they'd be more secure.
Cumshaw walks up to the scientist, and I can see that he's got something in his craw. So I moseys up right behind him. He puts his hand on the scientist's shoulder and pulls him around.
What are you talking about? The government moving people away from their homes. That's against the Constitution and the rights of the citizen.
Yes?
Yes. I've fought against dictatorship of this kind all my life, and I, for one, won't stand for it.
You fought to save your country?
To save the rights of men and free enterprise.
If you want to keep fighting for freedom, Mr. Congressman, you had better start fighting for permanent peace first. If you do not, everything else you fought for will mean nothing. There can be no individual freedom under the threat of atomic war, but only ruthless regimentation.
Regimentation. That's what I mean. Take OPA.
If we do not have permanent peace, we will have to have permanent regimentation, much tighter than OPA. A non-regimented nation will never be able to take a blow which might kill one-tenth or even one-third of its people in a single day.
Kill 10 million people in one day?
Yes. Or 20. Or 40. And the same number in other countries.
I don't know anything about this, but what about our army and navy? Can't they protect us?
What armies or navies did in any war so far would be of little use in a future war.
How can you stop atomic rockets hurtling through space across the ocean? How can you keep atomic bombs from being smuggled into the country in small pieces and assembled? How can you keep our cities from being mined with such bombs, which can be set off by remote control?
But we've got the bombs.
That's the thing. We've got the bombs and the secret how to make them. And if we aren't foolish enough to give it away, who's going to attack us?
Yes, we've got the secret.
Everyone looks at the scientist to see what he's going to say. Seems to me Stephanie is right. Cumshaw stands there over the scientist with that self-satisfied look on his face. But he didn't faze the scientist.
There's no such thing as keeping the secret. The principle is known. There are no fundamental secrets about the atomic bomb. Could we keep the secret of flying after the Wright brothers flew the first plane? Could we keep the secret of the automobile after Ford first built it? Could the Germans or the Russians keep the secret of the rocket guns? No. Once the principle is known, and it's been shown that the thing can be made to work, there is no way of stopping any nation from making it. No matter how much we dislike it, it is only a matter of time, and a short time, before all the big nations will know how to make atomic bombs. And we'll make them.
Stephanie came over to me.
I think he's right.
That's the way I got it pegged, I said. And then Wardle barges in again.
I don't care whether he's right or wrong. When are you going to get us out of here, conductor?
Stephanie steps in before I could answer.
Why don't you do something about it, Frank?
I tried to get out and walk, didn't I?
To save yourself. Were you thinking about this woman here with two small kids home alone?
I'm all right. The children are... Well, Timmy's 9 years old.
And what are you thinking about, Frank? Your property. And your syndicate.
Wait a minute, Stephanie. You got me wrong. Let me tell you something.
Cut it out. How long have we been down here?
Nearly 6 hours.
What are we going to do for food? What if the tunnel is caved in? Or something happened to the city over us?
The river is over us. Conductor?
Yeah?
You care if I go up front and see if I can help get the thing going?
No, I'll go with you.
Anybody else want to give me a hand? You, Wardle?
Oh, I don't know anything about things like that.
You don't know anything except what you've got. And what you want. And what you're going to do. Come on, Sig. I'll go up there.
Polzer was a mechanic. I left him and Stephanie up the head end. And when I come back, Wardle was talking to the scientist again.
Did I understand you to say that an atomic attack would kill 40 million people in one day?
Unless our cities are dispersed.
They'll never be dispersed. That's invasion of private rights and the rights...
Oh, shut up.
That's regimentation.
Well, suppose our cities were dispersed.
In that case, perhaps only 2 million would be killed by the same number of bombs that would kill 20 million now.
2 million? That would bankrupt the insurance companies.
Some British companies are already putting clauses in their policies. Not responsible for deaths due to atomic bombs. But it really doesn't make a lot of difference anyway. Because most of the assets of the big insurance companies are tied up in properties that would be destroyed. Even if an insurance company were not bankrupt by millions of deaths, most of its assets would be a pile of rubble and ashes after the first attack.
Cumshaw was getting wise to himself. He was trying to keep from looking like a chump. He saw that he had his hands more than full with the scientist, so he comes up with another angle.
Very well. You're a scientist. I don't know anything about science, but I know this, that if we corner the raw materials, how's anybody else going to be able to make atomic bombs?
You mean corner all the uranium ores of the world?
Yes. Go out after it. Buy it up.
But they wouldn't sell it.
Well, that's one thing. The only way we could get control of all the known uranium deposits would be conquering the lands they're in. The other thing is that every nation on Earth has been on an intensive uranium search for the last year or more. And we don't know where all the uranium deposits are.
Mr.
Maybe the tunnel has caved in. We've been down here 7 hours now.
Wardle was beginning to look bad. Sweat was standing out all over his fat face.
It should be dawn pretty soon.
Dawn. Hey, conductor. What happened to the motorman and the trainman that went out?
I don't know.
They never came back, did they?
Listen to the silence.
The lights are burning out.
Conductor, don't you have any more batteries for the emergency lights?
That's the last of them.
Somehow it doesn't seem so bad to me now. I mean for myself. I'd always hoped that I could at least bring my children up. It's only them. What'll happen to them up there in this atomic world that I'm concerned about? They're not old enough to have any part in the decisions that must be made. And yet they will have to suffer if the wrong decisions are made. Won't they?
Yes, they will.
The light is glimmering out. It's going out.
Timmy's 9. Dickie's 7. I suppose they fell asleep waiting. They'll wake up looking for me. But I'm not so concerned about that. I'm frightened of what's ahead of them. What, if there is to be an atomic war, what should we teach them? I mean, isn't it only fair that somehow we prepare them for what they will have to face?
The lights went out.
The lights are out.
I hate darkness.
I can feel it. I can feel it.
I could feel it, too. The blackness closing in, making me all alone. Trapped down there in the darkness. Not a sound. Blackness and silence. I tried not to think. Down under the river in the city in that blackness. Buried alive. No one said a word. I felt like screaming.
What on earth can we... I mean, could we teach our children? Our school books don't prepare them for the kind of future that's ahead of them.
Unless war can be completely eliminated, our school books will have to be rewritten. But the hour is late.
Then the lives of my children, and all children, are really in the balance.
That is right. Your children and the millions of other children in this country and in the other great countries of the world. Something has happened which has never before happened on Earth. A new force has been unleashed. An atomic bomb is not just another weapon. It's a decisive weapon. It's a weapon of saturation. Even if 90% of the atomic bombs directed toward one target were warded off, the other 10% would destroy us. And even if all atomic bombs could be prevented from falling on us, atomic bombs could be smuggled in to destroy us.
When he stopped talking, it was like everything stopped. The blackness rolled over me like an ocean. Not a person in the car moved in the darkness. I could feel my heart pounding at what he said and what it meant.
Isn't anybody going to do anything about getting us out of here? Are we just going to sit here and suffocate and die?
What have we to be afraid of here? It's those up there that we should weep for. I for my boys, my husband. You for your people. Deep inside me, I have been trying to tell myself that an atomic war will never come. I have been telling myself that it's too terrible. That no nation would dare to start an atomic war.
Terror has never stopped a war. When the attacking nation thinks it has a chance of winning by striking first, it doesn't count the cost. Fear of reprisal didn't stop Germany. It didn't stop Japan. It will not stop an atomic war.
You're a warmonger.
It was Congressman Cumshaw. I couldn't see him, but he seemed to fill the darkness.
Why don't you shut up? Don't you think this woman and all of us have got enough to incite us to panic without your rabble-rousing about how we're going to be blown to kingdom come by the atomic bomb?
Nobody said a thing. But I knew the scientist would talk.
Mr. Cumshaw.
Don't try to hand me that nonsense. I've seen your kind in Congress.
It should be clearly understood that no scientific discovery, no gadget or instrument of any kind, will save us from ourselves if we fail in the responsibility that is now before us. We have reached a turning point in history. Everything has changed. We stand at the dawn of a new day. We have the opportunity now to end war forever. It is our only chance.
Only chance? What chance?
The lights are on. They went on all of a sudden there. All of a sudden the lights were on. And everybody was in the aisles yelling and laughing and crying.
The scientist just sat there in his seat, looking at all of it. And all of a sudden the train started to move. And here comes back from up front the guy that works in the McKibben plant. And Stephanie, the gal that went up there with him.
Polzer here helped to fix it.
Congratulations, Polzer. Congratulations.
Who's running the train up there?
Oh, the engineer. He came back after the power went back on.
What was wrong?
Just the switch.
Somebody ought to be made to answer for this. Somebody's responsible. There ought to be an investigation.
Yes, keeping us trapped down here under the river all night. And me with a man waiting out of Exmoor to sign the syndicate papers for the Coliseum.
And what did you do about getting out of this jam? What do you do about anything that doesn't pay you money?
Now, wait a minute, Stephanie. Wait a minute.
When the chips were down, it was the little man. It was Sig Polzer that did something about it.
Well, Stephanie, about Wednesday...
Skip it. I'll be glad to get back to Otto.
The scientist and the woman with the two kids just sat there without paying any attention to the jabbering that was going on around them.
Stephanie's right, isn't she?
About the little people?
Yes.
Yes, she is. It's the people we meet in our everyday lives, the ordinary people, who must understand the jam we're in and must help us find a way out.
Oh, look. We're coming out into the light. A new day is starting.
Yes, it's dawn. I hope it'll be a nice day.
Nothing ever looked so good to me as that light as we came up from underground into the dawn. I was beginning to see what this scientist meant about the new day. Everything still looking the same, but everything different. And as we rolled along, I looked ahead at Sig Polzer and Stephanie, sitting up there together, and Wartle sitting up there in one seat, all alone, and Cumshaw sitting in another. And the mother sitting there beside the scientist. And I wondered if they'd change too. Or if they'd go back to living just like they did before. The train kept rolling, and I just kept looking at them and wondering.
William Bendix will return to the microphone in just a moment. You've been listening to the second program in NBC's new series, The Fifth Horseman, written and produced by Arnold Marquis. The plain truth about atomic energy and the hour of decision which faces mankind. And now, Mr. Bendix.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, playing this role tonight gave me a deeper understanding than I've ever had before of the meaning of the atomic bomb. It's important that all of us realize what we are up against. It's no picnic. We can have a better world or no world at all. But we've got to make it. Good night.